Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Oberle, writer, senior writer, I guess they call me. Senior everything, I think, these days. For VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePTSD.com. And I'm joined each week with my co-host, Mark Craig, NFL insider for the Star Tribune and Viking writer, and StarTribune.com. We're in the dead season of the year, but that never happens in the NFL. You don't have any dead part of the year. So we got plenty to talk about, Mark. And I wanted to hit you with a few news items that may be either real or made up or imagined or speculated, but just see what you think about it. But I heard your colleague Lavelle Neal from the Star Tribune say on KFAN the other day that Za'Darius Smith is now looking for a one-year rental. So it maybe looks like, when he came out at the end of the year and he put his house up for sale. He thought he was gone. Then he said he wanted to be gone. And the Vikings brass never did anything with him. They just kept him around. And, you know, him and Dalvin Cook have been hanging out there saying, what are they going to do with those big contracts? What are they going to do with those guys? Well, maybe they hung on to him, or they didn't do anything because they wanted to hang on to Za'Darius Smith. And Brian Flores came in and said, keep that man. Give him some money to stay here. So what do you think about that?
You say they didn't do anything with him. What they did was slowly they painted him into a corner, because now it's like, yeah, okay. If he got a new agent, wants a new contract. And what the Vikings did in the meantime was hold on to him, you know, not release him. He did all the things you do whenever you're trying to put the pressure on a team, I guess. Twitter, goodbye, Minnesota, we're leaving and all this stuff. And all this time passes, they go out, they get a pass rusher. So, the leverage is in the Vikings' favor.
Right.
And frankly, I don't see Za'Darius. I mean, Za'Darius is a powerful, like, personality. When he came here, he wasn't, at least one of the few times he talked, maybe the only time he talked one-on-one, I talked to him, and he tore the Packers a new set there. I could see him, end up somewhere else saying the same thing about how stuff went with the Vikings and their negotiation, because they went out, not that they don't need him. It'd be great to have much as you play like in just because they have two outside linebackers in Davenport and Daniil, they play so much of the nickel, so much of passing situations where Daniil would, I'd like to have Daniil inside and Davenport, if they can jumpstart his career on the outside, have three of those guys rushing the passer. That could be great, but he's not going to get a pay raise. He's not going to get a bunch of money that they don't have up front when they got to, get their money down. So I don't think, granted, he's looking for a one-year rental. Well, he also tweeted goodbye and that he was leaving and he put his house on the sale. So, somewhere in there, his camp is probably working on, and he is working on, if he doesn't report to the Vikings, he's not going to get paid. So, it's the leverage is in the Vikings' honor this way. But I don't see him showing up anytime soon. And I frankly, if I had to guess, knowing him and don't know him very well, but I'm saying kind of knowing that situation, I still don't believe he's going to be here.
Really?
I don't know.
It kind of reminds me, and you touched on it, reminds me of the Aaron Rodgers situation a couple of years ago where he was, doing one of his diva dances and saying, I'm going to go. And I was on this podcast with Joe Johnson, who created with me, and we had somebody else on. And I was arguing, they were saying, oh, poor Aaron Rodgers, what they're doing to him. I said, the guy's under contract. He's under contract. He's not going to quit playing football, and he cannot effectuate his own trade. He's going to play, which he did. That's what I think is going to happen with Daniil. Za'Darius. He's under contract. They want him, and they're probably going to make him figure out a way to get that done. I mean, he's got a big number, just like Dalvin Cook does. And I really feel like Dalvin Cook's going to go, but you really think that Za'Darius will be out there?
Joe, we're all like throwing darts at a board here, right, buddy.
That's what this show's all about, my man.
But I'm saying is that, he's not going to just show up to, he won't, he's not just going to show up at that. I don't think at the mandatory mini camp and say, here, with a big plate of, crow or whatever. You know, this is going to be it. He's dug in. He wants a new contract at a time where, I saw somewhere say where he had 10 sacks and he might have tailed off a little in the second half of the season. Tailed off, he went off a cliff. He was in the running for the defensive MVP, and then he hurt his leg at the end of that Bills game, and he was not the same player. Now you could say, well, if he was a little bit younger, that wouldn't be as big an issue. If he hadn't missed the entire year, basically the entire year, the year before because of an injury, that wouldn't be as big of a deal. But to me, he's over 30. He's, like you said, he's under contract. He should be there or have a renegotiated deal to where he's more affordable for him. Not going the other way. That's the reality of where he's at. I don't believe that he understands that or he accepts that. These guys are good for a reason. One, physically, they're gifted. It's a gift from God, their physical abilities. But also, they have a confidence in themselves that is beyond belief. And he might be a little bit delusional now if he thinks he's going to – because, let's face it. He knows he has one more crack at a big contract. And to get money up front. And he's taking it now because he probably knows he may not be playing a year from now. So, He may show up and play because, hey, what's the alternative? I sit out, I get fined, I don't make any money. He could. But I'm saying he's dug in, and he's a prideful guy. It could be a while.
Two questions real quickly. He didn't have anything done on that knee in the offseason. He hurt his knee against the Bills and was not the same. It was just kind of maybe just an injury that time heals, and he didn't have any procedure or anything done on it.
I don't believe he had any procedures done. No, but okay. But he was, when you get to be that age, I mean, as we might, for them that comes in their 30s, for us, it comes in the 50s, 60s, whatever. Yeah. And by the way, you're probably a super senior. I'm probably the senior.
Wow. So. Wow. So,
but yeah, I mean, there's so many red flags about you. Just that's like Adam Thielen. It'd be great to have a fairy tale ending and have him end. He'll retire as a Minnesota Viking because when he's done playing in Carolina, he'll come back for one day and we'll all go out there and rewrite the Adam Thielen story. But it's a business as much as it is as anything else.
Well, you just lost all the strokes you're going to get from me this summer with that age crack. So if super senior gets the strokes, not you. I don't care how bad you're back.
Oh, but you're a super duper senior.
Oh, nice. Is the other question I had about him, if he does decide to sit out, you would think he's got such a huge cap number. Do the Vikings have any recourse at that point? They would probably just cut him, right? And then they could get back his salary they'd have to, and they still have the dead cap money on there. But if he just says, I'm not going to play under this contract and says, because if the Vikings go into the season with him and he doesn't show up and he holds out, they're kind of screwed then, right? They lose all unless they cut it.
Well, they put themselves in position where they have the leverage. They went out and paid starter caliber money to a guy that they believe Brian Flores can turn jumpstart into the first round pick that he should be, or perform like a first round pick should be, which I think Davenport has had a disappointing career for a first round draft pick, but he's still really young, which Za'Darius doesn't have that. So they put themselves in a position where it'd be great to have Za'Darius have three of those guys going
right.
Now, meanwhile, they got, we'll talk about this too, but Danielle Hunter's got a contract. Danielle Hunter's been, his contract has been an issue with him since 2018 when he signed it. So that's a brewing thing that's going. But they put themselves in a position where, hey, just like they did with Cook, I guess ideally they would like to have both those guys on the team on their terms.
Mm-hmm.
But if something happens, they don't have them. They got Madison, they got Davenport. That's what they've kind of done it. They're nice and smile and everything, and they'll pat you on the back and say they got the greatest culture in the world. But they're still putting together a cap and putting together a team, and they're playing hardball with these guys.
That it sounds so enticing to hear you describe that with those three guys all happy and kumbaya and going after the quarterback in, you know, under in Brian Flores' defense. That would be exciting. That would take this thing up a notch from where it was last year all in itself. But I
don't think you have to be happy. You don't necessarily, because Aaron Rodgers wasn't happy in Green Bay and he won two MVPs and he was the highest paid player in the league. You know, Aaron Rodgers ultimately won his deal. He was going to do this. He's going to go to Jeopardy and all this stuff. And he ultimately got the highest paid contract in the league at the time and then ended up, you know, playing really well. And then he ultimately did get traded, you know, so he wins. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, I know people love him, hate him. A lot of people that aren't Packers fans or aren't his fans or hate him, but, you know, he's infinitely more important to a situation like with the Packers than Zadarius is with the Vikings.
What do you see in Danielle Hunter? I mean, this seems like it's every other year that Danielle Hunter's crabbing about his contract. And what did you mean when you said it was a problem when he signed it in 2018? What was the issue?
Well, he signed, hats off to the team. They got him, you know, before a 14 sack season. I remember it because I did a big profile on Anthony Barr. And Anthony Barr that day, either he was ready to cut a vein or I had a Wonder Woman lasso or something, because he just like what happened? What happened in the Rams game when Jared Goff was, you know, had that Thursday nighter where he was at perfect passer rating. And so he's going, we had a rookie corner in the slot. Because you remember that was where Barr was like, you know,
he was caught running back. Yeah. It's never been covered. Yeah.
Well, no, it was a slot receiver, I believe. Worst place to be is in the frame on ESPN Sports Center when the guy's scoring, because you're the guy who gave it the touchdown. That's not necessarily always the case.
Yeah.
So he talked about that. He talked about Zimmer and the defense. But one thing that he said, and I think I got it in the story, was and he was also and Anthony Barr was also angling for a new contract. And Anthony Barr, you know, we're talking about Danielle. Danielle had just signed. And at the time it was, 5 years, $72 million. And Anthony Barr said, you know, they got Danielle for a steal. You know, they stole money from Danielle.
Wow.
And it ultimately proved to be the case because Danielle was still like 24 maybe. Mm-hmm. He went on and had the big year. And then I don't know if that's before his two big years back to back.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly, heading into last year, they had to give him, money up front, which basically all they did was take it from this year. So now Danielle's only making $5.5 million for this season, which doesn't fit, his status as an elite pass rusher. And he's not happy about it. And he's probably not going to show up. He's not in the offseason program. Probably not going to show up at the OTAs. Probably not going to show up. Maybe not at the mini camp, because they're not in position to be extending him or there's a reason that he's not extended or Kirk's not extended. I mean, this is a team that is, in kind of salary cap hell, trying to get their way back out of it and still have a competitive team or a team that can win the NFC North.
Just like the Wild still suffering from Suter and Parisi's contract, but that's another sport and another podcast for another time. So Danielle's got to get paid though, then, doesn't he? I mean, if he's that underpaid for where he should be, and if they don't give Flores the guys that he signed on here to coach, that'll be a shame. I mean, if I finally get a coach that can get these guys going. I mean, Flores is going to be gone in a year or so, but that would hurt if Hunter doesn't play and Zadarius Smith holds out and what have you.
Flores is only gone if they have great defense. Flores is not gone if they're giving up 28 points a game and they're 31st in, passing defense. You know, Danielle, it's a tricky situation, I believe, because – I think Danielle finished with 10 and a half sacks last year. He kind of, I think played a little better at the end of the year as opposed to the beginning of the year. But I never got the sense. Now, you've got a new defensive coordinator, but you still have a 3-4. You know, I never got the sense that, like, Danielle was a 3-4 edge rusher. He just didn't have that look to him. He did not look like the same player. did not look comfortable away from the ball, away from the line of scrimmage. Not that they ask him to do that a ton, but it's a different defense. And I think he looked a hell of a lot better in Mike Zimmer's defense when his neck wasn't broken than he did, yeah. You know, and then he did play in a 3-4. So, they had a Band-Aid last year by, you know, basically giving him money up front that they stole from the, you know, the mm-hmm. following year. I don't know, you know, Rob Brzezinski only has probably so many rabbits in the hat that he can do. But, yeah, that's a tricky situation in that you want him. You want to make him happy. But, you know, again, the years of, you know, 2019 is when this team had to win the Super Bowl or had to, you know, go farther than just upsetting the Saints in New Orleans. That was when, after that was when, hey, you know, the Kirk contract was going to be too heavy to weather, to keep those cornerbacks and the defensive guys. That was their window. They didn't win enough regular season games. They did pull the upset over an old-looking Drew Brees. Then they got just waxed in San Francisco. And that window, you know, Zimmer made it another 2 years.
Or, yeah.
Right, 3 years, whatever. And it was, you know, it just never was going to work with Mark, what he needed defensively.
That's such a great point, you know, that we voiced, you know, ever we feel we've been hamstrung by the Kirk Cousins contract, and we certainly were for a time. How do these other teams do it? I mean, Patrick Mahomes is making more money than Sin, and all these other teams with great quarterbacks, they got to be top heavy. I suppose that's why they trade Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins, you know, one of their great players, because they couldn't afford. So maybe that's the kind of drastic stuff you have to do. And I guess the Vikings will cut Dalvin Cook if you consider that just as drastic.
Well, I mean, look, first of all, that, you know, their quarterback, when they, some of these quarterbacks, you know, like Seattle wins with Russell Wilson on his rookie deal. You know, Cincinnati makes it to the Super Bowl on Burrow's rookie contract. You know, Kirk is now, you know, you've got to pay him. And I think that Kirk can do it, but Kirk has never finished the deal. You know, he still only has one playoff win here.
Yeah.
You know, this team only has two playoff wins in the past 20, whatever it is. You know, going, so, you know, the quarterback finishes the deal, number one, but the other, look at the Chiefs. Look how they draft. Look, I mean, the Chiefs were having guys contributing on defense heavily in the seventh round. Their running back, who was, you know, this is one of the many reasons why teams don't pay running backs, no matter who they are, is because, you know, they got you know, Chiefs got the running back in the seventh round that was like 10 picks from the last pick in the draft, and he's, you know, he's what you need at that position and how they worked it. And so they've got a really nailed draft picks, and they got a draft. Yeah. That's how you the big splash is the, you know, the quarterback and the star free agents and all this, but, you know, they let go of Tyreek Hill and they hit the mother load for a guy his age, I believe,
right, when
it comes to draft picks. And that's how you, how you do it. The great ones do it. And the good ones don't.
And unfortunately, the Vikings couldn't find a trade partner for either Cook or Zaire Smith or whoever else they're trying to pick. One other note that was out there that I just wanted to pass along to you as we'll set up the next segment that we do. Apparently Tom Pelissero said on the Pat McAfee show that the Vikings, all the talk about their trading up for all these quarterbacks, whereas a lot of it was rumors, you know, draft rumors, but because they had, you know, Will Levis was there for them at 23 and so was Hendon Hooker, and they didn't even take a nibble at either one of them. But He did say that they were reportedly making calls to trade all the way up to see if they could get Bryce Young. If Bryce Young had not, you know, been drafted number one overall, they were trying to get up there to get him. Now, make calls, what does that mean? I don't know. But it's a report that's out there and a lot of people are talking about. So does that mean anything to you? What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, you know, the Star Tribune, Ben, reported that, you know, Anthony Richardson was a guy that they targeted, and he had fallen past 10 or if he'd have fallen. I think his mock drafted was and again, you know, sometimes mock drafts were all, you know, shooting in the dark, but with trading with Tennessee to get Richardson. Now, you know, Bryce Young. Yeah, Bryce Young. I mean, this is the thing about these mock drafts and what happens on the right before the draft is, you know, everyone, we were all like, and I have a hard time believing that the teams get like their emotional goes like this, you know, because they kind of know what's really going on. So they're not, but it gets floated out there. And I think it gets floated by teams that are farther down the pack because they want to put the pressure on someone like, okay, if you draft the guy you're supposed to draft, Bryce Young, number two, now you've got to answer all these questions. And, you know, what about his intelligence test? What about his, you know, can he think? Can he chew gum and walk at the same time? Stuff like that. But I don't think, especially now, you have a lot of young GMs that are fearless. Kwesi's a fearless guy. Kwesi's trading in his division, trading down. And so they're not afraid of, like, I don't believe they're as afraid as maybe in past years of what the public thinks about their draft. You know,
I saw they all played fantasy football coming up, and now that they got their hands on some real football, they still got some of those tendencies. Let's trade. Let's do this.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, the bottom line, what you're asking is that, yeah, they, if Bryce Young had fallen, if Richardson had been there in that, yeah, they were definitely prepared to go up, but it would have cost, you know, it wouldn't have been like, hey, let's give them Dalvin Cook's giant deal. Let's give them Zadarius. You know, 40-year-old Zadarius Smith. And
next year's draft.
It would have been number one next year, and it might have been number one next year and the next year after that, because there would have been a competition to get the, you know. Where I give them credit was they had restraint, and this goes back to something that O'Connell, you know, sounds simple, but I asked him about, you know, how do you balance wanting an elite quarterback versus just wanting someone are wanting to get an impact player at another position. He just said, you know, it's got to be the right guy. He kept repeating, it's got to be the right guy. So when they passed on, now it could be a mistake. Who knows? Will Levis could become a good player. Hooker could become a good player. But you got to admire them that they didn't feel that way, and they did not, you know, they didn't panic and take them and say, oh, we had to take a quarterback. So I think, you know, they made the, you know, they didn't overdo it by, well, first of all, they couldn't go because those guys went in the top four. So after that happened, I believe they spent more of the time wanting to go backwards than they did go forward.
Right. All due respect to the former regime, Mike Zimmer, I'd rather have Kevin O'Connell identifying who that right guy is at quarterback than Zim. Zim's a defensive guy, and I'm kind of excited that with his history as a quarterback himself and working with quarterbacks, he knows what he's looking for. So that's hopeful for Vikings fans, don't you think?
Well, I think, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's not, you know, Rick Spielman was not going to be a quarterback guru guy. I mean, right. if he had a strength, it was he and his people identifying pass rushers. It was probably, you know, from Jared Allen trade to Zadarius to, you know, those types of moves, that was probably their wheelhouse, I would suppose. But yeah, having Kevin O'Connell there to help Kwesi with the quarterback. Yeah. It's, and he's a play caller, so they're going to be working together. I'd rather have Zimmer. Well, my defense is horrible. Absolutely. Maybe they could be co-coaches. Yeah, Zim can come back and coach the defense, and they'll tell him you never have to talk to anybody. So, you know,
boy, that would be make some copy for your paper, wouldn't it, Mark? Okay, well, our senior on the other half of this screen needs a break. He's been talking for a long time here. I went over time. So we'll take a quick break and come right back to the Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Mark Craig from the Star Tribune is here. As promised, the NFL never, there's no sleeping. Rust never gathers, or moss never gathers on the NFL. Every day is an NFL day. And so they got the schedules coming out on Thursday, the schedule release. And it's like, you know, for seniors and super duper seniors, this never used to be a thing, was it, Mark? You know, as far as the schedule. Well,
this reminds me when I was 8 years old and going to bed on Christmas Eve, you know, Joe, and just not, I can't sleep. You know, I couldn't sleep because I just, what is, when are they going to play the Packers? When are they going to play the Packers? Now, but I can understand people's excitement because a lot of people do travel to games. There's a lot of Vikings fans that they want to know, are they going to freeze to death in Green Bay or are they going to go over on a nice fall day? Stuff like that. You know, what are the primetime games? That has an impact. So there is some importance to it. And it's
go ahead.
It's getting to the point where here's how big it's getting. The Star Tribune, for the first time, because we, you know, Andrew and Ben, they do something Vikings related, schedule related. I think Andrew does game by game. And they, you know, they leave, you know, I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. And that's the key, Joe. When you get old, you just say, ah, that's a bunch of crap. And then they kind of leave you out of it. All you geniuses. So if I get my Sid thing going on, then they'll leave me out of it. But this year they were like, hey, we need Mark to do a league-wide one. We need Mark to do a league-wide reaction. So I did a preview for it, which I think is coming tomorrow. And then I'll do like a review of it. So that's how big it is.
Wow, that is big. Mark Craig sitting there cranking out the pre-schedule hype. What do you got? Tell us what you gleaned from your big story that's coming up.
Oh, well, I already forgot what I wrote, but
like a senior, that a boy.
Yeah. But you know, obviously it's going to be all Rodgers all the time. I mean, the Jets were on one primetime game last year. It was that Thursday nighter in they played Jacksonville. Everyone has to be every team has to be on a Thursday night. So, I would say that the over under on them being on prime time or 4:30 is probably 9. You know, they're probably going to be
Cowboys. It's going to be like the Cowboys, you know, who are constantly on national TV.
Yeah, that goes back to America's team. I mean, the two things that are probably the most outdated in sports, and I'm sorry to offend anyone here, but the Cowboys as a national team and the Olympics. You know, the Olympics are not these little plucky amateurs going head-to-head anymore. It's NBA players. It's NHL players. It's all that stuff. So, I don't buy the Cowboys as – I mean, the Cowboys haven't won a Super Bowl, and my daughter's turning 28 this month, and they haven't won one.
The Vikings, you know.
They haven't won one in her lifetime. So, you know, but the Jets will – you know, and another thing they're doing that's new this year is sometime in December, the Monday night game can be flexed, which to me is a total screw job to fans that travel. If you're traveling and you're going to a Monday nighter in the middle of December and you got all your hotels set up, you got everything, and suddenly it's a crap game, they put it on Sunday and you're screwed out of your – but, you know, they're not worried about
– advertising revenue, the hell of the fans.
But it'll make for some, you know, better – I guess better – it will make for better Monday night games at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and then they have the Black Friday game, which is –
Talk about that. What the hell?
Well, it's the first time that they're going to – or only like the 12th time and since the merger that they've played a game on Friday after Thanksgiving. So if watching football all day long on Thanksgiving isn't enough for you, you can get up and watch a 2 o'clock game on Friday. And that's typically – isn't that when like Colorado and I mean, it's like there's an always seems like Iowa plays Nebraska, or it's always one of those games that might have been good like 25 years ago. Colorado plays Kansas State, you know, it's like, you know, stuff like that. I mean, that's I don't watch any of those, and I don't watch unless they like last year they stuck the Vikings in that last slot on Thanksgiving.
Yep.
You know, as you know, the one of the greatest movies in the history of movie making is Christmas Vacation, and I watched that on Thanksgiving night. So, and the Lions, you know, typically I'll watch, you know, the Lions are getting better, so hey, maybe we can see some good Lions games. But that Cowboys game, I don't know.
That game on Thanksgiving night is the saving grace of Thanksgiving football, because for decades you had the Lions playing. Every once in a while they'd show up. Now, granted, they always played better on that day, and then you had the Cowboys for how long, who weren't that good, and you just get tired of playing them. But
And then it lost first it lost Pat Summerall, then it lost John Madden, the Turduckins, and when I don't hear those voices anymore. Whoop.
Technical malfunction.
I didn't want to hear you anymore. They have that. It's gonna be heavy on Rodgers. You know, the show is gonna be heavy on Rodgers. I mean, they've not only do they have a schedule release, a primetime schedule release, 3 hours, whatever it is, but like this morning they released, you know, some of the networks, all the partners get to slow release. Like they've already said, CBS has already come out and said they had that Mahomes and Burrow is week 17, 4:30 game. So they've announced the
season will be up there. They'll be in the playoffs. They'll be resting Mahomes and Burrows by that time.
Well, it's a week. Yeah, I mean, that's you're right. Could be, but I don't. You know, it's the week before the last. You know, it's an 18 week season.
Yeah.
You got that. They've announced the five international games, which none of them jump out at me. But like Jacksonville's playing two London games again.
They're training.
If there's ever an NFL team, Jacksonville would. You know, that's the home team over there.
Mark, speaking of the Chiefs and the Bengals, those two teams are on the Vikings schedule this year, and it is not pretty. You got the six games against the divisional opponents, one at each place, but you've got to have – they're going to play at home. They're going to play the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Saints, and the Bucks. The Saints and the Bucks, I got no problem. The Chiefs and Chargers will be a couple of tough games. And then on the road, they got to go play the Raiders, the Falcons, the Panthers with Bryce Young, who they wanted, the Eagles, and the Bengals. That's a bloody tough schedule, road schedule.
And Denver away.
Yeah, Denver, who cares?
Well, yeah, I mean, they play the all four teams that made the conference championship games last year. They play all four of them. If you're looking at it and you're doing your schedule out ahead of time, when's the last time Green Bay was probably heading into a season considered your two of your breather games? Probably,
that's a good point.
I mean, that's been, you know, a 30.
Now the Lions are not.
It's been so long that Joe, you weren't even a senior last time it happened. Wow. But as far as the schedule, if you're looking for the schedule and you, cause we know the opponents, we just don't know when it'll be. To me, it's like, Kansas City and the Chargers at home, and San Francisco at home. If you can get Kansas City at home in a primetime game, that's a big deal. That to me is helps you win the game.
Right.
Especially if Flores' defense, one thing they lost with Donatell was they didn't try to rush the passer in a way that took advantage of US Bank Stadium. It just, you know, Zimmer, his nature to be a pass rusher, played with, and for the Vikings for decades, pass rushing in the Metrodome, pass rushing with this crowd is
great. He called for it every week in the media. He said it every week. Got to get these fans fired up for, you know, place rocking.
And Donatell just never had that gear when it came to rushing the passer. So you had Jared Goff standing there, you know, looking around. So if you can get, Mahomes is going to be hard to beat no matter what, but primetime game at home. San Francisco, not only could you maybe play them in prime time, but could you get them early? Get them early in the year whenever you're facing Trey Lance before he gets in some, gets some momentum going. Or, you know, I think Brock Purdy is more a product of their system than, like, he's not Joe Montana.
Yeah.
But, you know, get the 49ers early. Earlier the better, I think, before they get rolling. So that would be something to look for on the home schedule. Away, it's like, if they put them in Philadelphia on a Monday nighter or a primetime game again, that's kind of a screw job to the Vikings.
And
we all know that everyone, Joe, schedule maker, referees, everyone's against us. You know that, right?
It's only taking 17 years for you to come across.
They love the Packers, so you'll be getting screwed twice a year against the Packers.
Yes, we're going to play two games in Lambeau this year in December. That's how they're going to screw us.
I know. I've heard that. That's a rumor. It started. You know, right, Cincinnati, I wouldn't call Cincinnati a tough place to play, but, you know, when you play Joe Burrow, you know, when you play Joe Burrow, you know, when you play that, maybe play them earlier than later, I think.
Starters. They're slow starters. I'd love to see them. Mark, how many, you know, the Vikings, you know, you're talking lining up all these matchups. They got some big time opponents. They are going to get some primetime games and some national games, aren't they?
Well, yeah. And the Vikings are a primetime opponent on their own, you know,
right.
13 wins last year, 11 one score win. Now, granted, it doesn't always happen year to year, but they based the schedule on the most recent evidence of things.
Yeah.
And the Vikings were involved in the game of the year in Buffalo. That was the NFL's game of the year. And it was the catch of the year. And Justin Jefferson. I mean, people can't get enough of Justin Jefferson. So, yeah, the Vikings, you know, are going to be, to me, the Vikings in Kansas City, the Vikings in San Francisco, Vikings and the Eagles, Vikings and Bengals. Those are all games that they're going to be looking at, like,
Chiefs.
You know, the Chiefs, let's get them in prime time. You know, let's show the world Justin Jefferson against Patrick Mahomes.
Well, that's going to be a problem for the national. They're going to have to do some homework to find out exactly who the Vikings are and that they actually have a team here in Minnesota and Albert Land.
Well, yeah, because, you know, the coasts, the East Coast is against us and TV's against us because, you know, nobody knows where we're at because they just fly over us, Joe.
That's correct. You know,
and they smell, especially when they go over Green Bay, they can smell the Midwest. You know, it's like, whoa, it stinks in the middle here. Let's get back to our apartments in New York.
That's rough. It's spoken like
I feel bad for you guys in the middle, Joe. You're just getting a raw deal all the time.
Where do you consider yourself being from Cleveland? Is that middle? That's not the coast.
That's Midwest. Oh, yeah, Cleveland, Midwest.
So it stinks where you're from, too.
I feel
Lake Area, all right, buddy. I've seen Lake Area. That's a little smelly at times.
Yeah, I mean, we're just you guys complain about not winning Super Bowls, and we complain about, like, what is the Super Bowl?
Well, the Vikings are starting with the processes this week. They got OT offseason. Well, they have a rookie mini camp going on right now, I believe. And they've got some offseason OTAs, workouts on May 22nd, 23rd, 25th, 30th, 31st. Then in June, 2nd, 5th, and 6th, and 8th. And then the mandatory mini camp, which we won't see, Danielle Hunter, is on the June 13th and 14th. So those are the dates coming up. Decided to throw those out there. But, Mark, got the rookies. All the rookies are in, the six guys they picked up in the draft, and the undrafted free agents they're bringing in, and some other camp bodies. You know, you mentioned in the past, there's always some UFDAs that jump out at camp that don't expect. You mentioned to me Mike Boone was one, and certainly Adam Thielen came up through those ranks as an undrafted free agent. Do you guys make predictions as you're going out to watch this stuff? Who you're going to see? Who's going to make the big splash? Or you just wait for it to happen? And what do you got there?
Well, you know, not predictions, but by nature of the Star Tribune being having the most resources,
mm-hmm.
And for purely selfish reasons, I prefer like to try to find someone that absolutely no one else wants to talk to, like. Everyone goes out there and they're going to want to talk to Jordan Addison. They're going to want to talk to the cornerback. They're going to want to talk to, you know, like if there's a, like if sometimes like some of the younger veterans are invited, Lewis Seen, you know, so the pack mentality that, and then granted, these are things that people want to hear about. You know, you got to do that. So I like to watch a little bit and see like who stands out to these very amateur evaluators' eyes. And Mike Boone was a guy. Now, running backs are – you can get fooled by running backs because they all tend to look good. You know, if there's one position where you go, wow, that guy looks good, it's running back. But Mike Boone, the way he was catching the ball and stuff, and just the way he moved, I was like, wow, yeah, that's a guy I feel like could, you know, could make it as an undrafted, at least make the roster or make the team. And he did. And Chad Beebe was a, just watching him was like, wow, that, other than the fact that he was really small, it was like, this guy was like, he just looks like he could do it, and he can, but he just can't stay healthy. So I talked to him, and obviously with his dad, was able to talk to his dad and do a story on that. And
one of the greatest Super Bowl plays ever. Greatest Super Bowl play, Leon Lett chased him down and knocked the ball out of his hand.
And the speed, I mean, as fast as Chad was, I mean, he would have lost to his dad in his prime by 10 yards. his dad was an amazing speed and talent. But yeah, that's kind of what I look at. Only because, like I said, it's selfish reasons, and the fact that we've got three and sometimes four or five people out there. So you're able to cover a lot more ground than anyone else. So, so that's what I kind of look for now, but it is fun to kind of, especially when the first pick is a skill position player, like looking at Justin Jefferson. I mean, Justin Jefferson didn't start till week three, I believe, his rookie year, but everyone, including Zimmer, knew that this guy was a little different. I mean, than a typically good receiver. I mean, he just looked amazing and his ability to how smooth he was. And obviously it played out that way. So yeah, you kind of look for little subtle things like that. Offensive linemen are tough to get a sense for, because even unless they're, top 10 offensive tackle, that's, I guess there's no sure things, but those guys tend to stand out. But, typically an offensive lineman looks like sort of like a giraffe when they fall out the first time and land on the ground and they're trying to get up, things like that. So
I guess I'd look for that. Yeah, I'd look for that, the giraffe giving birth. What about Ivan Pace? Is that the right name? Isn't that some guy? Is he the guy that's going to put zero on his number is going to be zero or something like that? Or
The inside linebacker from Cincinnati?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's like, if you're, of course, the fans can't see it, but looking at Addison, things that Addison, the corners, that the two top two, the corner and the defensive back that they picked, the running back at the bottom, is always fun to watch a new running back who's been drafted.
And a quarterback.
That's, if people are going to want to talk to him, even though he's a fifth round draft pick, I mean, he'll be a big, quarterback will be a big draw.
I'm saying Ivan Pace is going to be your guy. He's going to be your guy.
Well, I mean, you're underestimating Jackie Chen from Pace University. Do you know where Pace University is?
I do not, sir.
I found out about 20 minutes ago. It's New York City. It's an offensive tackle, Division II school. He's 6'6", 310, which doesn't mean anything.
University,
but he's from, his parents came here from China, which he's Chinese. I don't remember any Vikings players that were Chinese, so that's a cool story.
Yeah.
They got a kicker from Georgia who's made a lot of big kicks, but just from my own viewing habits or watching Ohio State, I know that was a close game because this kicker missed two right. kicks in that game.
They picked him up. Oh, my God. I didn't
realize. Well, as one of the 15 undrafted guys.
Yeah.
So it's always – interesting to see a new kicker just because there's only one of them.
Vikings had a Georgia kicker, didn't they, that lasted for a little while. Blair Walsh, wasn't he from Georgia?
Is he Georgia? Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
So, just don't put in if it's below zero and you don't put him on the – don't give him a 27-yarder.
No.
So – or maybe when you snap the ball to him, don't put the laces in front or in the back. So they got three receivers they brought in from undrafted guys, three inside linebackers, three corners. So, those are guys. I mean, the Vikings have a rich history, and I haven't done the research on how they compare to other teams, but a rich history of undrafted from John Randall and, going back even the beginning with Mick Tinglehoff and Marcus Sherrills was a guy that was was invited. Wasn't signed as an undrafted. He was invited to attend their camp and, proved that he could be an outstanding returner.
Same way.
Thielen was a roster invitee and was only got attention because he was practicing. basically he was a when he got to Mankato, he was from there. Other than that, we would never have paid any attention to him.
How about that? Now he's going to be on the soon to be world champion Carolina Panthers with Bryce Young throwing to him.
With Bryce Young, yeah, that's another one. Although I would think that you catch him anytime, but a rookie quarterback, I'd want that Carolina game to be early. You know, it'd be kind of nice to go down, go down there when you're facing Bryce Young when he's still just like, what's going on here? would be better than maybe later in the year.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break. The super duper senior needs a break, so we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with the rest of Vikings Territory Breakdown. Welcome back, folks, to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig. Mark, did I say Mike Craig? I meant Mark Craig.
I go by either.
Okay. Well, we got Mike Woldem as our producer, so it messes with my super duper mind. Oh, I forgot to say senior. My super duper senior mind. Speaking of Vikings territory, we have Jeff Diamond, former GM from Vikings, Tennessee, and still involved in the league, writes for us, and he did his draft grade for the Vikings, and he gave him a B+. And then the website did a survey of 1,200 readers, and 52% gave them a B. Mark, where do you think those grades came in? Do you think the Vikings did that well? I'm giving them an A-, but then, I'm from Minnesota. So what are your thoughts on how they did overall, just for a quick hitter?
Well, I liked the receiver, but, I felt that was a need. I'd rather have them take the receiver that they really love as opposed to the corner that they love. Now, that's going to be open for discussion and review years from now, whenever you look at the Giants taking a corner right behind them, the Vikings taking the fourth receiver in a run of four straight. It hurts not having a second-round draft pick, but I like having TJ at tight end they had to pay for that second-round draft pick. I like the fact that this is Jeff. I read it briefly, but he liked that they that they showed restraint in not giving up picks for next year to try and get either higher up in the draft or to get a second rounder. He liked that they Kwesi showed some restraint. The analytics guy showed some restraint to just sit there and wait.
We think he showed some restraint. Maybe he couldn't get.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's very true. But I think the way that he's proven that he'll find a way to move if he truly wants to. I make fun of the draft, the grades and stuff. I think I noted that NFL.com had 17 teams with A's, 14 teams with B's, and then the Lions were the idiots at C+. So, but Jeff is a guy that I respect. Play golf with him twice a week, but he's obviously Jeff Diamond. When he gives a grade, it's not, I don't dismiss it. So I liked, how he breaks it down. He's probably a little more level-headed now. It's hard to give anyone, I would imagine it's hard to give him an F because you just don't know. It's hard for me to give anyone an A because I don't know. But like he did, Jeff gave the Lions a C+ as well because wrote it in a way like he doesn't trust Jalen Carter. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that, whenever he was doing this for real, he had to worry about character guys. He had to worry. I mean, the way he negotiated Randy Moss's contract came with a lot of if Randy screws up, Randy's not going to get paid. And when Randy went in the Hall of Fame, Jeff told me this story. When Randy went in the Hall of Fame, next time he saw Jeff Diamond, he said, "I told you, Jeff, you weren't gonna take any of my money." And Sutton, they had a good laugh about it. So yeah, when Jeff's weighing in it, I take a little more note, put a little more credence into it than if I were to give a grade, or someone like me.
I have to think that old Randy Moss worked his way right up to the edge of where his money might have been gone because he had a few issues while he was here.
Well, the thing about the Randy's issues, they elevated to nuisances, I would put it at, more than what it could have been with Randy's the history that he had, and
right,
getting, you know, in high going to high school, and then Florida State, Notre Dame, all those different things that, you know, where how he ended up at Marshall and
Bowling
and frankly, you know, people will say he didn't. Obviously, he didn't. There was times where he didn't. There wasn't full effort, but you know, he's one of the greatest players in the history of the league, and was pretty damn good.
A couple of things. I read this yesterday, and I apologize. I can't remember who was doing the analysis, but or maybe I heard it, but they were saying how the Lions actually saw us coming with that TJ Hockenson trade, because the Vikings did trade, I believe, a second rounder for him. And then they knew that coming out this year was a huge tight end draft. And they took one early. So Laporte, I think his name is, maybe from Iowa as well, if I recall correctly. So they were, you know, didn't necessarily screw the Vikings, because the Vikings got TJ Hockenson, which is he's already a very solid, was great for them last year and is going to be great going forward. But, you know, it cost them a second round pick, which is some pretty high capital. And so you got to give them credit, which concerns me about the Lions. If they're going to make smart, shrewd moves like that, that
we don't know in the past. It's just, that's two 180 degree conflicting opinions on TJ. You know, that can only be decided over time. I mean, if Hockenson isn't as good as the guy that the Lions picked, and the Lions have him on his rookie deal, and they don't have to give him as much money as Hockenson's going to get after this year, you know, the Vikings not only gave up the second round draft pick, they got a guy at a point where he's going into a second contract. So the Lions could be genius, or the Lions could have picked the tight end version of Charles Rogers or Mike Williams, or all the mistakes that they made, you know, back in the Millen era. But the Lions, I believe, deserves somewhat of a – I mean, everyone seemed to hit the Lions harder than any team in the league, because they picked the positions that no one else thought should have been picked that high. Running back at 12, middle linebacker at 18. It's like, you know, the belief on the Lions is they think it's 1975, and they picked or 65, and they picked Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers. I'll go back to your era, 65. So, to me, it's like, yeah, I mean, people could write, yeah, the Lions, you know, the Lions saw the Vikings coming. The Vikings could say, hey, look what this guy did. And after 4 days of being with us, we saw the Lions coming. Now, the Lions were one in six or 1-7. And the Lions turned it around after Hockenson was traded. The Vikings, you know, won the division by 4 games over the Lions, in part because Kirk Cousins, that was exactly what Kirk Cousins needed. And you also got to look at who's around. You know, it's not just apples to apples, because Hockenson's a big deal, is a big deal to J.J.
Jefferson.
To Jefferson. And so to me, that's – you need Hockenson. You need an Addison to make Jefferson even better. I mean, it may take a couple catches away from him, but it's going to make your offense better. It's going to make him have bigger plays. So it all works together. And I think,
yeah, that's very good.
Or could be a win-win. Who knows?
It looks like it is so far for the Vikings, and they don't have a guy. Now, granted, he's moving into a second contract, which would be costly, but he's also an established player in the league, where Laporte, we don't even know what he's going to do yet. Look at you defending the Vikings. Way to go, Mark. One more
question. All of you critics, all you people,
you geniuses. Are you concerned at all about Jordan Addison's size? You know, that's about the only haulback against him. I mean, it sounds like he's a great route runner. He's smart. He's quick. He's got some pretty decent speed. Won all the awards. He's got great hands. But he's really small. He's like 5'11 and 170, I thought. God, I'd actually, me dwarfing an NFL player, holy buckets.
Well, yeah, I don't like your chances of catching him, though. if they move him to tight end, then I'm really worried. But, you know, Marvin, again, I'm not saying he's Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison was 170 pounds dripping wet. Wow. Was a great receiver. Yeah, obviously I had Peyton Manning throwing to him. But I, you know, Kirk is an accurate quarterback. Addison has the ability to separate. That's the most important thing. And this is not, this is as big as the other two, is the Vikings are, with O'Connell running the show, I think, as opposed to whoever Zim had, Clint Kubiak, you know, trying to design the offense. I think that the Vikings, you know, they're going to find ways to get him where he's not just lined up against a corner that's 6'4 and 200 pounds. You know, they're going to find ways to get him, release him. And they did, and the good teams, the Rams and all, you know, these good offenses, they do that with bunch formations, with motion. You'll probably see the Vikings, if Addison becomes a good player and improves that he can play, you're going to see him, there's going to be a lot of motion. There's going to be even more. That's what one of the, I mean, now Tyreek Hill was solid. I mean, Tyreek Hill is not a small, he's a short guy. But he's not your prototypical receiver type body. He's quick. He's he was hard, one of the hardest guys in the league to defend. So, you know, what the Chiefs do to what the Chiefs did and what Miami did or does gets him free. You know, so that's, you know, it's not just, it's not like in Randy Moss's, even Randy Moss, it's hard to think of him as a throwback player, but, you know, you lined up Randy Moss on the left side, you told Randy to run as fast as he could, and you threw him the ball. Or, you know, the game has – the offensive strategy and has evolved. And, you know, I think a 170-pound guy can be a great player. I mean, there's, yeah. I wouldn't put that on him. Just like a 5'10 quarterback that went number one overall, the league has changed. I mean, quarterbacks aren't just all 6'4 and stand there and throw it. They do all these different things.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting, the NFC this year. Everybody's the Lions are their darlings. Everybody's picking them. I don't know if I'm ready to go there. The Packers, I guess I'd ask you now that the Aaron Rodgers deal is in the rearview mirror and he's collecting all his receivers that he never got in Green Bay in New York. How quickly did they rebound? Is Jordan Love going to be a decent player? Is he going to be a player on the level they're used to? I talked to somebody yesterday. He said he started watching him when Favre came in, and he's never seen a non Hall of Fame quarterback for his team in his life. And I had no response to that. How do you see Jordan Love? And I was going to say, if he's not decent, they would have moved on from him and started, you know, they did draft another quarterback this year, but they've been kind of anxious, the Packers themselves, to move on from Rodgers and get to him to a certain degree. Should we be afraid here in Minnesota?
Well, I mean, to ask him to be what they've had since 1992, and that's a big ask. I mean, he doesn't have to be that good for them to have a good team. You know, I think this is a transition year that, you know, when Rodgers took over, Rodgers showed signs that he was going to be may not be a Hall of Fame quarterback, but he was a guy that sat and learned, and you could tell he was going to be a good quarterback. But they had a losing record his first year. You know,
the second year they won the Super Bowl. No, third
second year.
Third year. Yeah, no, the second year was Favre was in Minnesota. The third year they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so I mean, and Favre that first year, I believe, was. I think they were on a losing record, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, Reggie White comes in right around that time. So it was Favre and Reggie. You know, Reggie White had as much to do, I think, with that turnaround in Green Bay as Brett Favre did. Well, that's saying a lot. Reggie White was maybe – if he's not top five defensive players of all time, he's – He doesn't have to strain his neck to see it. So
he looks like a man among boys some days.
So that you know, there's going to be a transition period. Is he as good as those guys? I think the Packers, obviously, I mean, clearly, the Packers feel that he has what they need to be a quarterback. Otherwise, whenever it looked like Love was going to be their starter 3 years ago. And Rodgers got it worked out where he came back. He wins two MVPs. than he has last year, where they don't have a winning record. So there's a 3-year window there where if they really felt like, okay, he's maybe not the guy, they would have drummed up a trade and unloaded him. But they kept him. In a way, you feel bad for this guy if he is good, because he's had 4 years taken off of his career, just like Aaron Rodgers did, you know, basically.
Right.
Doing it the old school way, where the new school way is draft him. And if it's Thanksgiving and he's not starting, oh, he's a bust. We need another one, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of quarterbacks, the Vikings lost one of their legendary quarterbacks this week. Joe Capp passed away, and it was sad day for me because Joe Capp was one of my first big NFL, you know, stars that I like, certainly because of the first name, but also because he led the Vikings to the Super Bowl and the NFL championship. Actually, they won it in 1969, although that was later called Super Bowl, and so they don't have one of those. But anyway, I remember as a kid, you know, my brother, older brother, said, you know, he liked Fran Tarkenton when he was there. And so I said, I like Fran Tarkenton. You can't have Fran Tarkenton. And I thought, well, I don't want Ron Vanderkellen. So I kind of waited till Joe Capp showed up, became my player. And he played with such a style of, you know, like, he was like a running back or a linebacker in a quarterback's body. It was not pretty, but it was phenomenally. Set the record for most quarterback or most touchdown passes in a game with 7, and still holds these ties. He's tied with that record. Somebody else tied it. I can't remember who.
Well, there's 7 people that have it. There's 8 people total that have it. 8 have people that record. Yeah.
And I still remember him running over some guys from Cleveland in the playoffs to get to that Super Bowl, but or against Cleveland. If you
recall. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I feel like I'm doing one of these a year, one of these a month. You know, the passing of these legendary figures that are all kind of in that. You know, from Bud to Jerry Burns to Fred Zamberletti, and just it's just sad to see how it. I never got to know Joe Capp, and spent the last 15 years of his life battling dementia. And all that I've gathered, all the people that I have talked to over the years, and I'm not old enough. I mean, I was alive when they played in that championship game, but my first memories of football doesn't come until like 3 years out. Super Bowl VII is the one I first. That I can have memories of watching. So, you know, they play Cleveland, but obviously there's that clip of where he, and it, when you look at that clip, it's in a nutshell, just how the NFL has changed, because he's 31 years old. So he's not really old, but he looks left and his receivers are covered. So he turns to the right and he's running. And this isn't slow motion. It's an actual clip.
He's lumbering.
And my God, he looks like I told Patrick Royce or someone, I say, look, so Patrick, I'm watching this clip and he looks like you running around the corner. So, or I could have thrown myself in, you know, but I just wanted to stick in my, but, you know, but he goes to, and later on, Joe Capp says, I gave him all the moves I had, all 2 of them. He was like, I gave him all 2 of my moves. And here's Jim Houston, you know, at the time, a big linebacker, 245 or whatever. Yep. He's getting ready to clobber him. And Joe Capp wasn't small either. But Joe Capp tried to hurdle him and I think got about 1.5 inches off the ground, catches his knee in Jim Houston's helmet.
Yeah.
Jim Houston drops, is knocked out before he hits the ground face first. Joe Capp flips, you know, head over heels, gets up and walks back to the huddle. You know, obviously Jim's day is done. Joe Capp's day goes on. And but he was probably – of all the people that, you know, there's not the most, he's one of the most beloved, like blue collar Minnesota. They call him, yep. Like the era of Broadway Joe, and, you know, Joe was
right.
Was doing the commercials and with the pantyhose. And that might've been a little bit later than this, but, you know, he was the glitz and glamour. He was the fur coat. He was the diamonds and the NFL, AFL. And Joe Capp was Hennepin Avenue Joe is what they call it. You know, you guys called him back in the day. And was a hard drinking guy. His fists were always going where his mouth went.
Played at age 73, didn't he, on TV, for crying
out. Yeah, I think they brought together the CFL some figures from a Grey Cup game or something, and they had were rivals and when they played, and they got into a fight when they were in their 70s.
Oh,
but you know, this is also a guy who, after that, and you said that they changed the name of the championship. No, the Vikings won the NFL championship. There is a actual trophy. It's been a great story I've written about where nobody really knows where it is or where it's been or who has it now. But that's the year before the merger. So that was the last year of an NFL championship being not being the final game of it. Cause then they had to go on and they had to play the Chiefs and got destroyed in one of the biggest upsets in Super Bowl history. But that was the best team in the league. They led the league in touchdown or points. They led the league in fewest points allowed. The Purple People Eaters were never more dominant than like 69 and 71. So that was a great, great team. But Joe Capp never played it down with the Vikings after that because he had some lawyer that they wanted a whopping $1.25 million over 5 years with $250,000 up front. And the Vikings said, oh, we can't do that.
Yeah.
But at the time, that because of the Roselle rule, Pete Roselle determined when someone signed, when a team swooped in and signed another team or tried to, sign another team's unsigned player, Pete Rozelle determined what that team had to give. So, you know, it was typically like two first-rounder acquisitions. So it scared everyone away. So, and the Vikings ended up trading Joe Capp to the Boston Patriots.
Patriots, not the New England Patriots.
Yes, it was the Boston Patriots. They got a number one draft pick, which became Jeff Seaman or Simon. Jeff.
Seaman,
I've obviously written the name a million times. But
a linebacker, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So and he became a fantastic player. And another player that they got. So, and he played like only 10 games for the Patriots and then he was out of the league. So talk about a guy that when he, in 1969, he hit and also got credit for the 40 for 60, which was a mantra.
Just going to say
yep. 40 for 60. That's because, and I talked to Dave Osborne, that was leading rusher on that team and said, yeah, he retold the story about came time for the MVP, the banquet. He walked up and said, only said, you know, took the trophy and said, there's no most valuable player on this team. There's 40 most valuable players, handed it back and sat down. So he was so, so beloved for things like that.
Oh,
and
man,
just greatest. How gritty and tough he was. So again, we're talking about another legend that's not here. So it's sad.
Yeah, it is. It is that, like I said, one of my formative memories are of Joe Capp, and I made a decoupage of him and hung him on my wall. It's like I remember the Sports Illustrated cover with the tough Chicano, you know, with him on the cover. I remember just reading it in the library, and it just on and on. He was the stuff for me. And then when he left, I was just heartbroken. But that's the way it goes. Yeah, well, that's one Joe gone, and that's a segue to another Joe gone, to Joe Johnson, who created this show for us and put us here. Tip of the hat to both of them. Maybe you can say hi to Joe Capp for us, Joe. And just wanted to thank everybody for tuning in this week, coming back. I appreciate that. Mark, thank you. Mike, thanks behind the scenes. And we'll be back next week. We'll have plenty more to talk about. My God, we'll have the schedule out, Mark. We can talk about that.
That's right.
That's right.
Doesn't get any bigger.
So thanks, everybody. Thanks, y'all. And until next week, we'll see you then. Skol.
Skol.